Well, hi everyone, and welcome to the Modern Cotton Story, sponsored by E3 Sustainable Cotton. I'm Jennifer Crumpler, Fiber Development Manager and Manager of the E3 Sustainable Cotton Program from BASF and host of today's program. Today, we're going to continue our series of podcasts that we're calling Teaching Sustainability. For me, I'm really excited about this series because we really get to introduce a very wide range of professors from higher education who are really kind of teaching today's students, both at the undergraduate and graduate level, about sustainability and transparency in the supply chain. Really have those professors coming in from every part of the supply chain, whether it's in, the ag space, where a lot of our growers and farmers on that side of it really work and do, or even, all the way through the supply chain, in textile, apparel, all of it. So, and today I'm also joined by industry consultant Bob Anishak. And Bob, thanks again for always being on and willing to help.
Well, thank you, Jennifer. I hope you're doing well today.
I'm doing really well and excited, really, because today's guest, so our listeners know, I'm really excited because he is at my alma mater, NC State. So Dr. Trevor Little, he is a professor of textile and apparel management in the Wilson College of Textiles at North Carolina State University. And he has taught at NC State for many years and well known throughout the global textile industry. So Dr. Little, thanks so much for being on today with us.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's really my pleasure to be on and talk a little bit about sustainability.
Awesome. I was telling Dr. Little beforehand, I always get excited when I get another Wolfpacker on here. So I think we've had a couple of Mississippi State people. So I think we're going to get our NC State people back online and going. So, but, Dr. Little, you've had a really accomplished career in academia. You've studied around the world. You've worked with many textile and apparel companies in conjunction with your activities at NC State. But really recently, you've kind of taken a, real keen interest in sustainability. And really, I always like to, before we jump into asking some questions and getting your perspective about sustainability and in that space, was wondering if you'd really talk about your background and some about the textile and apparel programs that NC State offers so our listeners can learn a little bit more about it.
Well, sure. I have a background that I don't have ever get out. You want to see my CV? You want to see my CV someday. I really spend most of my time today in making new things. And so when you're in that space of making new things, you have to create and you have to make. So you have to be both. You have to be a creator and you have to be a maker. So why is that important? And that's important because when you create something new, then you have to put in at the early stage everything about sustainability. If you don't do it there, it's very difficult to do it later on. It takes a long time to understand this, but design of something really brings to the fore all the ingredients of that sustainability. Of course, I have colleagues who say, I don't understand sustainability. But the reality of a sustainable program is one that is going to be financially successful, environmentally successful, and socially acceptable, and give good product to the consumer. And so that's why I like to think about this sustainability stuff.
Thanks for that, Trevor. With all the students that are coming through your program these days, you have a, what would you say is the total enrollment in the textile school
at this point? Today is about 1,200.
About 1,200. Yeah. And a lot of the students are from all over the world, right?
They're from all over the world. Mostly graduate students are from all over the world. But locally, at the undergraduate level, maybe 90% are local, just in-state paying students.
Interesting.
And so, yeah, so we have a lot of really bright, talented, young people coming into this industry and trying to make careers in it. So it's really a very interesting place to be.
What do you think are the greatest challenges that the students will face as they try to go into the industry? Because the industry is changing all the time. That's why I asked that.
Yeah. I don't know. I've had maybe 5 or 6 jobs or something. But I think that's probably going to be the way of all our younger people entering the industry. They're going to have to think about 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 jobs in their career, just because the industry is in a state of flux and it's changing really quickly. And so that generates this whole concept of changing jobs. And that's a very difficult thing to teach.
I'd say. Are there any particular topics that the students ask you about?
Well, so before we talk a little bit more, you know, one of the things that we're dealing with are the Gen Zs. And so every decade or so, we get a new cohort. And the current cohort is Gen Z. And they're probably a couple of years into university life. But the one thing about the Gen Z cohort, or that student group, and that again is like an average, but they're very into a cause. And so if you present them with a cause, they will buy into it much better than previous cohorts. They're also really into understanding a lot more about sustainable products. And what are they? And why did the industry not have sustainable products before? But, you know, my answer to that is the industry's always had sustainable products. We just never called them sustainable products. And so then that leads up to all the practice and the theories of what happened back a couple of hundred years ago when we had sustainable products. And so it's a very interesting side of things to enter into some of the new thinking amongst our younger students and help them navigate a path through not just the education program, but also through the industry, what's happening.
Mm-hmm. You know, and that's really interesting, because that's something we've heard from other professors, is that really, you know, the new students, new generations, they really are focused on a cause and wanting to leave things better. And you know, really asking the why and wanting to leave things better and, you know, than before. And, you know, I'd really be interested in knowing, you know, what are some of the ways that you define sustainability and teach those concepts in your program? And are there any particular metrics that you really stress more when discussing the functions of the industry supply chains and, you know, some of those concepts that you that maybe are focused on now that might not have been as much prior to this new generation?
Yeah, now you're going to launch me into a whole
dialogue. That's okay.
Go for it, Trevor.
Okay.
Go
that's
for
okay.
it.
That's exactly what we love.
the traditional definition of sustainability are bringing together the economic factors and the environmental factors and the social factors. And, you know, whether we like it or not, we have to face it. We work in an industry where I call them like watchdogs. They watch what we're doing and they'll go after named brands and try to convince the consumer that that brand is not doing what it should be doing. And so we're seeing the rise of these watchdog groups. And it's not a bad thing. But there's many people in the industry who do not give them any really good time. So a watchdog might come along and say, give us $10,000. And the brand is just going to pay $10,000 because a lawsuit is going to be a lot more money. Mm-hmm. So we have to deal with these. But, you know, in many ways, these so-called watchdog groups help us to be on our toes and help make sure that our students are on their toes as well, because we do not want you entering into things that are going to cause lots of issues. So that's one of the big issues. The supply chain, oh my goodness, you know, the supply chain is changing so rapidly. And it's changing, we were just talking about it earlier, about the transportation costs. And, you know, we got so used to this transportation cost, but all of a sudden the transportation costs are now 2, 3, 4, 5 times what they used to be. And since we live in this sort of cost-based economic factor industry, cost keeps coming back and back and back. And this is a very difficult thing to teach to younger people, that whatever you have in your back pocket is money, and I have to get it out of your back pocket. And the way I do it is I give you a really good, valuable product, however I do it. And so where's your cost going to be? And so once you now put into this factor these transportation costs, you know, the consumers are saying, why is my cost going up and up and up and up? And the Gen Z, this sort of new consumer that we're dealing with, is also very cost conscious and really surprised when the cost of something is increasing very rapidly. On the other hand, with this pandemic, you know, in this area here in Raleigh, North Carolina, housing costs are going out the roof. And some people are suggesting that it's because during the pandemic, people didn't travel or spend money or go out for entertainment or any of that stuff. So they have a lot of money. But that has not trickled down to the basic garment industry. That's a bit of an issue for us.
Interesting.
Yeah, so it's a it's a really sort of like, I'd say it's like a conundrum in many ways. Also, we're seeing this big movement of reshoring, nearshoring coming at us, partly because of the Reshoring Institute, and partly because this transportation cost is pushing to make local or cut down on this transportation cost. So that's a big part of the movement. And but our industry is just not, I don't know, collectively focused on capturing some of these. So we probably need sort of really a new type of leader for our industry.
A lot of change.
Yeah, it's just all the changes. how do you work with change? So I always think that, you know, when you deal with people of my vintage, we've learned through life how to change. And the younger person doesn't want to change. And they don't know how to change because it's not in their vocabulary of life. They haven't actually figured that out yet. And so when any of these big things come along, you know, you must target the right age group, so to speak, or the right experience group to get an item accepted. And so I'm sure you probably know all of these theories of getting across the chasm.
Yeah.
If you introduce a product and it takes a while to get across the chasm of either a socially sustainable product, or it has this sort of time it takes to just get diffusion to occur. And so when you bring something new in, this diffusion time takes a long time. And so this word that we're all dealing with now, sustainability, so when you bring this word in, it's just simply going to take time for that word to diffuse through population. And sometimes we are very impatient. We don't want to let that diffusion occur. And you see this every now and again. You see a new brand come on and suddenly they disappeared. Well, why did they disappear? They disappeared because they didn't let diffusion work. And so there's other big factors and forces at work in this whole world of sustainability.
Well, that brings up a question. How about transparency? What's your take on that? I forgot I would just lob one to you there.
You know, I answer that question in a different sort of way.
Okay.
Everybody's familiar with the Textile Labeling Act.
Right.
I don't know when it was created, but you know, we're now living in a digital world. So one has to ask, how much information is really on that label? What would it be like if that label was truly digital? That we threw out the existing label entirely and made the label a digital label. Then with the digital label, you can have transparency. But today we're still bound by that Wool Textile Labeling Act of an actual physical label. Maybe we just don't need that, you know?
Think the feds would ever go along with that?
Well, that's why I think we need to have a radically new approach to an industry organization. So one of the things we've been looking at is blockchain. And, you know, blockchain became famous for that cryptocurrency, Bitcoin. And so you can trade Bitcoin and buy Bitcoin, etc. But it's based on this theory of blockchain. And so we've been looking at blockchain and publishing about blockchain and just making sure that blockchain will be a way of doing transparency way into the future. So this whole concept is gaining quite a bit of traction as we get into this world of transparency. And so I know this too, because under current labels, it never tells you who the designer has been. And because so much is put in at the very early stage of a product, and it doesn't matter which product you do, that is missing from the existing labels. And so one of the things you just simply have to do is to relook at the labeling and make sure that that early creator's work.
So you're thinking of like an RFID kind of tag? That sort
of thing? Could be a quick code or something like that. I mean, we have lots of places that you can place these products, and it doesn't have to be an RFID. It just could be a quick code, and you point a camera. Everybody now has a phone that has got a camera on it, and you can point it, and it'll give you the whole history of the product.
So the blockchain would facilitate that sort of thing, right?
Yeah, so blockchain will take you all the way back to the understanding where that product originated. And if you're growing cotton, maybe back to the field. Why not? You know, it could say, I'm going back to that particular field. By the way, talking of cotton, I have to point out, I go down into the country every now and again. And all around me this year, everybody's growing corn.
Yeah. I think the prices of corn and weather in North Carolina this year, it pushed everybody to plant corn and then beans. So yeah, it'll be interesting. I think the final acres of cotton will end up being what was planted And then what we end up actually being able to harvest is really going to be an interesting year. Got a little because of weather, North Carolina weather in the Delta and everywhere. So, yeah, it really will be interesting to see how much product we have available to harvest this year.
It's really on the ground, and there's no mm-hmm. big theories or anything. It's just looking, and there was a field not far away, and it had maybe 1,000 acres of cotton. This year, it's all in corn.
Well, Dr. Willow, one thing you mentioned as far as, cotton and taking things back and, where the product originated, that's a big thing for us at E3, is that we work really closely with our farmers, and we can tell you where every bale that came that is in our program, we can tell you every field that it came out of, 8 different sustainability metrics around that, and all the information. As Bob mentioned, transparency, it all goes hand in hand. And for me, I've worked in the ag industry for, 20 years. And I'd really be interested to learn how you, and in your teachings and others, maybe incorporate cotton, about textiles and apparel and the role cotton plays, and how that really is kind of portrayed in the conversations and topics that you guys have with your students.
Oh yeah, no, I think there's many different ways of talking about this, but the reality is cotton is a big part of the garment world, huge part of it, and it's one of the things that cotton always has and always will have is a cost advantage. And so the hope is that we never lose that cost advantage of 100% cotton. But cotton is not cotton. There's many varieties of cotton, and there's many flavors of cotton. And everybody thinks their cotton is better than somebody else's. But we were just earlier talking about the labeling law. The labeling law doesn't distinguish between these different types of cotton. And that's I think it's a shortcoming. I think if we could have some better labeling systems, we would be able to tease out like the difference between organic cotton and genetically modified cotton and Supima cottons and Pima cottons. And so we could probably do that, but the labeling doesn't let us do that. And so, if one cotton is more valuable than another, maybe we could label it as such and train the consumer. And again, there's this diffusion time that you need to do that, but you could train a consumer to look for a certain type of cotton. Also, we think about product in innerwear, middlewear, outerwear. And so cotton has a big role to play in middlewear and innerwear. I'm not so sure about the outerwear. I know they're sort of trying different finishes and things like that for outerwear, but it's still predominantly in the middlewear and innerwear world. But that we don't think of structuring things according to where the end use is most dominant.
Interesting.
We could. I think it's not an impossibility. I think we just have to think a little differently about where we're going to place things. We have this, I think in Raleigh next month, we have this Tex-Tex Steel program coming up, which is all the technical textiles. And that is going to be dominated by the synthetic fiber world. And so it's going to be very difficult for cotton to break into things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you've got to really focus on the absolute end uses. So one of my buddies is a shirt maker. I think they make maybe 1 in 7 or 1 in 8 shirts in the U.S. and a dominant cotton user. And they basically go around the world looking for the best cotton. And, you know, they make really fine shirting. We also did some work with a company down in Peru, and they buy a lot of U.S. cotton and make up to, well, like 160 singles.
That's pretty amazing. Somebody
here from Vidalia Mills and probably hasn't seen 160.
Not 160 in a long time.
But the fabric, you know, this, the point is that fabric feels completely different than, say, 30 singles cotton. Mm-hmm. And so we have to think about not just the feel and the hand and where it goes and how to market it. There's, you know, it's a, really a fiber with very attractive cost, depending on where it is.
I was going to say, if it's 160 singles, though, my goodness, what's the cost? What's the cost of that shirt? Wow.
It doesn't matter. You know, it's interesting because, you know, some shirts are on the market now for $250.
Yeah, I know. I'll never forget because I spent so much, you know, much of my time, my career in the beginning phase of the supply chain. And this in the last year and a half, really started working downstream with some of our partners. And, you know, I'll never forget the first time one of the partners we worked with, and they, you know, did kind of these small drops of product, and they would only do, you know, maybe 100 pair of jeans or something. And they were selling for $1,500, $1,600. And I just had to scratch my head. Like, wait, what? People are paying that? Like, wait, what?
Yeah, they do. Yeah, they do. There is a market. Yeah.
Exactly. No,
it's the perceived value, which is really important. And some of them have this cause attached to it. And, you know, they're going to give so much of the profits to somebody. And it's a cause that matches with the value system of that particular consumer. And so it's not uncommon to see products that are really high, you know, so.
Yeah.
But it's, I think one of the things that we're not really focused on is taking these traditional fibers and making them into something which they're very capable of becoming. And I think we may have missed a few opportunities and let some other people into the market. And that's just my view.
Yeah, well, Dr. Little, I appreciate so much. I think, I know I could ask you a ton of questions and Bob could too, especially about, you know, with all your experience and everything. So we really appreciate so much you joining us today and being on the episode. And if any of our listeners should, you know, want to find out any information about the program and any of the research that you're doing there at NC State and the Textile Place, what is the best place for them to find that information?
Our websites are pretty good. You know, NC State has, sometimes it goes down, but it really has a pretty good website, and you can navigate through the NC State website through textiles, and you can get a directory of people there. And so we just recommend going to the website as the initial place to find generic sort of information. Like everything else, you know, the true connection is with the person. And so, but there's a big directory of maybe 150 people that you can connect with. That's
wonderful.
Areas.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate that so much, Dr. Little. And so should, if any of our listeners do have any questions about the NC State textile apparel, you know, and for Dr. Little, please make sure you check out that website and, you know, look at all the wonderful information that's available. And, you know, I want to thank you, our listeners, for joining us today. And should you have any questions about the E3 Sustainable Cotton Program, don't forget, you can always reach out to me at E3Cotton@BASF.com. Also, don't forget to follow along on Instagram and Facebook at E3 Sustainable Cotton. Thanks so much and see you next time.